What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hello, glow and tell girlies. It has been too long since I filmed an episode. I'm so excited to be back. Literally didn't even realize how long it had been, but I checked my podcast YouTube channel and saw it's been like 62 days. And that hurts. That actually does hurt me to even comprehend because I love this podcast. But to tell you the truth, life has just gotten busy and I kind of had to kick this on the back burner, even though I love this podcast and it's my baby. There were other things that were taking precedence in the past few months. I'm gonna catch you up in a sec, but let me introduce the topic of today's episode first so you can skip the recap in case you don't want to hear it. In honor of my 24th birthday happening just a few days ago on June 7th, I wanted to do an episode that kind of had something to do with like birthdays, like with my birthday. And I thought it would be fun to do 24 things I learned before 24 or 24 things I learned by 24. Basically my life lessons that I've learned up until this point in my life that I want to share with you. Just a jackpot of wisdom that I can load onto you because I've learned a lot. I feel like I'm wise beyond my years in a way. I'm so excited to get into that. Before we get started, I'm gonna do a little catch up. Like I said, you can skip just like a few minutes ahead if you don't want to hear it. But for the loyal ones who care, this is for you. So some exciting things have just been happening in my life recently, which I don't know. It feels so unreal. And I'm already thinking about my New Year videos that I'm gonna make literally in like 6 months. Okay, wait, also, the fact that the year is almost halfway over, how did that happen? But anyways, I'm thinking about when I'm gonna make my New Year videos for next year, and I'm gonna be going over my vision board and my goals. Like I already am feeling myself check things off and I just can't believe it. I actually have been thinking this year, like that I made my vision board a little bit too ambitious, a little bit too like out there. Even when I was making it, I knew some of the things I was putting on there were just like a little crazy to consider. I'm like, girl, this is probably not gonna happen. But part of me still wanted to put them on there and just like reach for the stars. But things that I put on there thinking were so crazy and were, I don't know, maybe just things that were more down the line for me have started happening. And I look at the board now and I'm like, oh my gosh, it's making sense. These things are actually coming true before my eyes. So I've just had a few like dream things happen in the past few months. The number one biggest one, and you'll know some of this if you've been keeping up with me on, you know, my YouTube channel, Sophie DiLoretto, just like my Instagram and my TikTok, I post a lot more frequently on there, but I got invited by YouTube. Okay, YouTube. To an event in New York City. And that was like literally unreal. I'm not kidding. When I got the email, I was like screaming because what do you mean they wanted to invite me to their event? I don't know. It just feels like a full circle moment. So I really went out of my comfort zone going on this trip. I actually ended up going with a friend. I really wanted to go on this trip, but I was so scared to go on my own. And I have this friend who's a content creator and I thought she would be a really great fit for it as well. So I like reached out to YouTube and was like, I just want to recommend a person for you to invite. I didn't know if anything was going to come out of it. But in my mind, I was like, I'm going to go to this either way because I cannot miss it. And they ended up extending an invitation to my friend. So we got to go together and that was like a huge comfort, just me not having to literally go somewhere completely by myself because that was like just crazy out of my comfort zone. But even me going with her was still so out of my comfort zone. Like I was so anxious, but I did it scared. Like I just pushed through the fear and I did it because I knew I wanted to do it. And it was just such a good feeling. So I went to this YouTube event at Google in New York. That was like the first trip that happened. Then later on in May, I went on another trip to New York with my boyfriend for my birthday. And then like the weekend or the next weekend after that was my birthday and my mom's birthday and my friend's birthday party. So basically life has just been really busy. And after I went to that event in New York City with YouTube, I got invited to another event, like a local one that was only 30 minutes away from me. I'm like, what? I had never been to like an influencer event before, and then like now I'm getting invited to two in the same month. Like, I don't know. I just literally all of a sudden I feel like I've nearly conquered my fear of flying. Not even, okay, I don't want to say conquered it. I just feel a lot more comfortable with flying. And I honestly want to make a full episode about like getting out of my comfort zone, because that was a huge goal for me this year and I've really been delivering on it. So I won't go too in depth here, but I really did well. I did so well and I did such a good job on the plane, even though it was so scary for me. And, you know, showing up to this event, not knowing any of the other creators there and socializing with them, like, I just feel very proud of myself. And I really do feel like I've been getting out of my comfort zone, which was my whole goal of the year. So I'm proud of myself. I'm feeling good. And although I haven't been, you know, active on my podcast, a lot has been happening in my real life that I just feel very proud of. So I'm going to get into that in like another episode that I'm really wanting to film. But today we're going to be going over 24 things that I've learned by 24. So I just turned 24. Honestly, it feels so weird to even say. I feel like I'm like 17 years old. Sometimes people will ask me how old I am, and for a minute I'm like, how old am I? I can't even remember. And I honestly feel like everyone kind of feels like this, but you just feel younger inside than you actually are. It's weird to think of myself as being 24. I also feel like 24 is that weird in-between age. It's like 19. 19 felt like a weird age to me as well. It's like your last year of being a teen, but you're an adult. I don't know. I just feel a little weird thinking about it. But like on the flip side, I'm very grateful to have lived this long and to have experienced as much as I have. And as I always like to remind myself, aging is a blessing. But I do feel like birthdays start to get a lot scarier the older you get. They can just be a lot more emotional, but I actually did not cry on my birthday this year, and that might be the first time that that's ever happened. This birthday just felt very happy and exciting and fun, and I had a really great time. I actually had this note in my phone, and this was kind of what started this thought process. I was like, I'd love to make an episode about something to do with my birthday. I've seen this sort of format done before, but I remembered that I had made a note, honestly, years ago when I was in high school. I started writing down like lessons that I would tell my kids, and I checked my phone to see if it was still there, and it was. So these lessons I'm going to be sharing with you, some of them are ones from there, and also I sat down and I just thought about it for a while longer and kept adding to the list until we have 24 lessons now. So you're getting advice that my future kids are going to be getting too, but there are honestly so many things I've learned and so many lessons. I just came up with these 24. There are definitely more, but these ones are really important and they're things that I've already discovered in life and things I've already learned that I want to share with you. First up, we have ones related to money, like finances, career, independence. And the first one is to make your job something you love. And you might immediately be like, oh my God, that's so cliche. We already all know that. But I was actually talking with my mom about this recently because I feel like I've seen posts lately of people saying you don't have to love your job. You can just have a job so that you can have the life you love. And I guess that might sound at face value like a good idea. Like in theory, even if you had a job you hated, if it made you really good money, it wouldn't matter how much you hated it or like how much it sucked, because it would give you the life you love by giving you money. I just don't think that could be further from the truth. Every person I know in my life that has a job they don't like, which is honestly a lot of them, if they dread their job, it's like they're burnt out to where after work, they don't even want to do anything else. Like they don't have the energy or the drive to even do the things they love or to want to do anything more than just the bare minimum because their work drains them. So I just feel like in theory, this sounds good that like you could have any job. It doesn't matter if you like your job or not, but I think in practice, it's not realistic. I think making your job, if not something you love, maybe something that comes easy to you or something that comes naturally to you or something that fascinates you is the best thing you can do. Because at the end of the day, even if at first you're like, oh, I could do a terrible, like annoying job, you know, whatever. But like, if that's what the rest of your life is going to look like, think about doing that for the rest of your life. Would you get absolutely sick of that? Would that be sustainable for you? There's always room to shift in your career, but honestly, it can be hard. It can be hard to pivot once you start going down a certain path. So I think my advice here would be find something, like I said, that comes easy to you, that you enjoy in some way, that you find fascinating or that you find impactful, and make a career out of that. Some people might not consider this like a job or a career, but I've made a career for myself as a content creator, a podcaster, an influencer. I wanted that job and I wanted that to be my job. And again, like whether you consider it a job or not, it is a job. I am doing work and I make money from it and I make a living from it. And it's something that is work. It is hard. I have to put a lot of time and energy into it, but I genuinely enjoy it. Because I enjoy it and I find it fulfilling, I have the drive to want to work hard at it. If there's something that you just don't care about, it's like no matter how much you try, You just can't put that amount of effort and energy into it. If you're not gaining something from it and getting some sort of value from it, it just won't matter to you. And I just feel like that will never be the right way to do it. When I think about the fact that this is our one life, I want to do something for my whole life that I do find fulfilling and that I do have fun with. I know this may come from a place of privilege because it may not be, you know, at this current moment, realistic for you to have, you know, your dream job, but I just encourage you to think outside the box, have an open mind about this, and try to work towards something that will bring you joy in your daily life so that you can be happy at work and after work. Number two, invest from a young age. Okay, I was so intimidated by finances for the longest time. I didn't start digging in until probably like the last year or two when I really started to make like a sufficient income. But before that, I would just have my money, whatever I made from like working retail or fast food, sitting in my bank account, my just regular Comerica savings and checking account with like literally no interest. I made pennies off of the thousands of dollars that I had in that savings account because there was just nothing. When I finally did my research and invested it into a high yield savings account, I now make hundreds or thousands of dollars a month just from having my money in this high yield savings account. I'm not trying to give you financial advice here. I'm not an accountant or a financial advisor, and I'm not selling you any product here. I'm just saying the people who are rich, the people who do well with their money, do not have their money just sitting in a basic savings account. Once you start making money, honestly, at any age, it doesn't matter how old you are. Like, I would have done this in my high school job if I had known it was a thing. Open a high yield savings account. Again, I want to tell you, do your own research about this. Be responsible and smart with your money. This is just from my experience, but I did my research and I ended up choosing Wealthfront. It's like its own separate account. So I make money on that money every single month. And number three, build your credit score early and be smart with your credit cards. I was so scared of credit cards for so long. I feel like most people would get a credit card, honestly, like when they were in high school or maybe a little bit after, but I was terrified. I didn't get one until I was like 20. And I just think I was doing myself a disservice. I was scared of credit cards because I had just heard of people like having issues with credit card debt, and I didn't want to have credit card debt. But the thing is, you won't have credit card debt if you don't spend more money than you have. Getting a credit card is going to be crucial for you when you eventually want to buy a house. You might be hearing this and be like, yeah, obviously. I guess this is more for younger people, but basically, don't be scared of a credit card. My credit score is really good now because I've been working on building credit for several years, but I basically just realized that there's nothing to be afraid of in terms of credit cards. I would buy everything with my debit card, and I didn't realize that you can literally get like free flights, free food, free things from your credit card points. Basically, the way that a credit card works, if you don't know, is, you know, you buy something with a credit card, but then you have to go pay your credit card off. As long as you pay your credit card off every month, you will be good. And as long as you don't spend more money than you have, I just wish I would have started doing it sooner. Number four, stand firm in your boundaries, even when it's uncomfortable. I have a lot of thoughts about boundaries because I have always had boundaries. We all do. And the times where I faltered on my boundaries as a result of like peer pressure or stuck with my boundaries are both equally impactful to me in different ways. So for example, one standard that I have for myself is that I don't drink. There isn't even any particular reason as to why I don't drink other than I don't want to. That's the only reason. I don't feel the need to explain it any more than that. It's like putting poison in my body. Why would I want to do it? That's it. That's the only answer. But in society, that's so weird to people. It's so foreign to people. Whenever I put up that boundary in a social setting where someone offers me a drink or tries to push a drink onto me, they seem so uncomfortable with the fact that I don't want to drink. It's like it upsets them way more than it even affects me. It's kind of like unfathomable that me not wanting to drink and refusing a drink could be so upsetting to them. But it's truly just a reflection of that person. When somebody reacts to your boundary in this way, like they peer pressure you to do something and you say, no, I don't want to, and they start freaking out, they pressure you more, it's a reflection of them. Truly, nothing is personal. It's like holding up a mirror to them. You're seeing them the way they see themselves. They're presenting to you the way that they feel. It has nothing to do with you. But like me saying to somebody that I don't drink and saying, yeah, I just don't want to. I don't need it to have fun. I take care of my body better than that. And I don't say those things right out the gate. I usually just say, I don't want to, and then they start to question why. But it's like it starts to make them uncomfortable. Maybe they start feeling insecure in their choice to drink because they realize, yeah, why am I actually drinking? Like for social validation. And then that makes them upset in a way, and they kind of have to feel defensive of their choices. Or another example was like, I did not want to ride rides growing up. Like I didn't want to go on roller coasters or spinny rides. I just didn't want to. And that was another thing that was weird to people. They'd be like, why would you not want to go? It's so fun. They would make me feel so weird for it, or they would pressure me me to do it. Honestly, that's often the case, that they feel defensive about their choice because of the choice that you're making, or they feel threatened because they've never seen someone so confident in their boundary. And you setting a boundary without over explaining can honestly feel threatening to people and like puts them on the defensive. But none of that is your fault. I think it took me a while to learn this, but it's like showing yourself respect. I feel proud of myself for doing it, and I feel confident and happy with my choices rather than feeling regretful. An example of where I gave into a boundary that wasn't being respected by someone else and it didn't really turn out well was I was with a group of people, someone and their parents, and I did not want to go on this Ferris wheel. I was having really bad anxiety. It was a huge Ferris wheel. I was like in the pit of my anxiety. I was really not doing well. I was depressed, super anxious about everything. So I really did not want to go on it. I must have told them like 30 times, no, I don't want to go. No, no, please don't make me go. I don't want to go. I don't want to go. I don't want to go, over and over and over again. And they just kept pressuring me. I eventually finally gave in because I just felt like so ostracized by them for saying no so many times and for them not accepting that. But on the Ferris wheel, I was so freaked out that I scratched myself because I was like panicking and I was just an anxious mess. Like I kept it together on the outside, but literally I was in the corner of the Ferris wheel just scratching myself and crying over how upsetting it was. And I hated it. I so regretted going on it. I was like, I hate that I let them pressure me into that. I didn't want to do it. I knew I didn't want to do it and I gave in anyway. So think about those two scenarios and just remember, you staying aligned with your boundaries and not giving into peer pressure is such a sign of self-respect and it's honestly so admirable. Don't ever feel ashamed of your boundary. And even if somebody tries to make you feel bad about it, like people would try to make me feel weird for not drinking, honestly, they're the weird ones for not respecting my boundary. So just know that. Number five, no is enough. This kind of goes into the last one, but it's about over-explaining yourself. You don't need to over-explain and you don't owe anyone an explanation. You can give one if you'd like, but simply saying no is enough. This is something that I've definitely struggled with because I feel like I have to give people a justification, but I actually don't, and you don't either. Some examples are when I was working at Target and I would get sick, I'd be so scared to call off work, even though I was literally ill, like I was very sick and that was obvious. I felt so sheepish and nervous to even call in that when I would call them, I'd be like, I'm so sorry. But yesterday, like I started not feeling good and then I got a fever and then I got like chills and a body aches. And then today it's like even worse. And I'm like having this and this and this. No, I don't need to say any of that. All I needed to say was, hi, I'm sick. I'm so sorry, but I can't come in today. Or I'm just letting you know I'm sick. So I won't be coming in for my shift today. Just wanted to let you know. I didn't have to literally give them my whole life story, but I felt the need to over explain in order to justify why I wasn't coming in when really me simply stating that I was sick was enough. That was enough of a reason. I didn't need to say any more. And that's something I remind myself of now. Like if someone offers me a drink, just me saying no thank you is enough. Another boundary people constantly push with me is being vegetarian. Don't know why, but it's so upsetting to people. They constantly ask me why I'm vegetarian. I actually don't owe them an answer. I don't have to sit and explain it and then have them try to say, oh, but plants have feelings too. All I have to say is it's just a personal choice. That's it. And honestly, when you present a boundary like that, it almost just makes them look weird for questioning you or pushing you further on it. So like I said, this kind of goes with the last one, but really no is enough of an answer. You don't have to over-explain yourself. And another one about boundaries. Number six is your boundaries matter more than someone else's feelings. This has always been hard for me to practice. I actually had a lot of situations in high school, especially where I would have friends disrespect me, do something weird, or like a guy friends do something creepy, pass a boundary, and I would feel so uncomfortable, but I didn't want to say anything because I was going to make it awkward. I didn't want to make them feel weird and I didn't want to make us have an awkward relationship. When in reality, they were doing something weird. They were doing something messed up. That was not right. That was not okay. I should have spoken up. My boundaries did matter more than their feelings in that instance. And me trying to protect the peace just wasn't worth it because it ultimately made me sacrifice some of my self-respect for them. So if you're in a situation where you feel nervous to say something, it's kind of scary. You might make things a little bit awkward, but you really feel like it's not right. It's not okay. You need to say something. It's always the best choice to say something, to stand up for yourself, even if it feels scary or uncomfortable. Otherwise, you end up letting people walk all over you. And I think I was scared because I was like, I don't want them to think I'm mean, but sometimes it's justified. Sometimes you have to be mean to someone, or not even mean, but you might need to be stern with someone if they're disrespecting you, if they're doing something that's simply not okay. It's okay to be stern with them, to stand up to them and to tell them that's not okay. 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 Number 9, if you're policing someone's loyalty, it's a sign to let go. This is something I learned in relationships, specifically in one relationship where things got really bad and I started constantly feeling the need to check his phone, check what he was doing, because he had given me so many reasons and he'd already like micro cheated or actual cheated many times. And I started feeling this like compulsive need, this fear. It was like a mix of anxiety. And honestly, just like I knew he was doing things and I knew I was gonna find something and I just like had to know and I had to stop him from doing it more. But I've even seen this happen with friends of mine and it's hard to watch now realizing what that is, because think about it. If you have to check someone's phone and like monitor what they're doing and go through their stuff to make sure they're not cheating on you or to prevent them from doing it, like that's already a bad sign. If they were gonna do it, they would do it. Or in other words, like if somebody was going to cheat on me, I wouldn't want to stop them from doing it. If that's who they really are and the type of person they are is someone that's gonna cheat on me and disrespect me in that way, I honestly don't even wanna stop them from doing that. Like go ahead and cheat then. You're showing your true colors and it just makes it easier to walk away. So if you find yourself in a relationship of any sort where you're feeling sketched out, you're constantly like, oh, I need to check his phone, I need to go through his stuff, I need to look at his photos, whose posts is he liking? Honestly, just let them do it. I guess it's like the let them theory that's really cringe, but I've been seeing that go around lately. But like really, let them do what they're gonna do. You'll really see where their loyalty lies. Number 9.
Whether I'm worried about hosting or just giving that perfect gift, creating a delicious holiday for my loved ones is super important to me. From effortless holiday hostings to unforgettable gifts, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. They've always been super convenient in giving me the most high-quality steaks I could ask for, whether for myself or a loved one. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. Save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com, and for an extra $35 off, use code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM. Go to omahasteaks.com and use code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays, decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa, got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments, Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels, Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Emotional maturity is the best gift you can give yourself. Emotional maturity is one of the most important things in any sort of interpersonal relationships and emotional intelligence. Emotional maturity is the quiet power of knowing who you are, not needing constant validation, and choosing peace even when chaos is available. It comes down to your ability to understand, manage, and express your emotions, and it's vital. It's literally crucial for you to have, and I honestly find this also crucial for my partner in a relationship to have. It's very clear when someone has it and it's very clear when they don't, like when they have a low emotional intelligence. An example of low emotional intelligence is honestly people having a lack of empathy. If they can't really empathize with others, they don't have good social skills, they aren't extremely caring for others and others' feelings, they react to situations drastically and irrationally, or they let their emotions get the better of them. And emotional intelligence takes time to grow, but I just think it's so incredibly important. It allows you to understand yourself better and react to situations without overreacting. It's something I definitely want to teach my kids and raise them with a great awareness of their emotions, what they're feeling, being able to process them. So the core tenets of emotional intelligence are self-awareness, meaning you can recognize what you're feeling. Then it's self-regulating, meaning you pause before reacting. You say, is this justified? Our emotions are always valid, but they're not always right. We need to know that. Pausing before reacting allows you to not let the emotions like anger, jealousy, rage take control, but instead you let that rational part of your mind be in control. That's communicating with someone even when you're upset or hurt without fighting and screaming. It's talking with somebody about your feelings. You can have a disagreement with a partner, but a disagreement doesn't have to be a fight. It can just be you two talking, sharing your emotions, your feelings, without saying anything hurtful, without being irrational, and coming to a conclusion or a compromise. This method of communicating is so much better, so much more effective, and just so much better for your relationship than the other way around. The next lesson I've learned, number 10, is you choose the discomfort in your life. So choose wisely. I talked about this a bit in a recent YouTube video that was about how to actually start working out, but I heard this a while ago and it really stuck with me. You will feel discomfort in your life no matter what, but the actions you take actually choose the type of discomfort you will feel. It's like how there's eustress and distress. Distress is obviously a negative emotion, but eustress is actually positive on your body. It's like positive stress, like working out. So you could choose the discomfort of working out so that you have a healthy, functioning body that suits your needs, that allows you to live a long life, that makes you feel confident, or you choose not working out because it's more comfortable, but then having the discomfort of physical ailments that come from your lack of activity, of not feeling confident in your body, etc. This applies to other areas of life as well. You could take the discomfort of working hard towards your dream job so that you can eventually live the life you want to live, or not take action and instead suffer a life of not doing the thing you have a true passion for. Number 11, you can't control your circumstances, but you can control your reactions. This is a big one, and I feel like this might also be kind of commonly said and might feel like a bit of a cliche, but you know how they say like life is unfair, but it's fair because it's unfair to everyone? It's kind of like bad things will happen, or objectively bad things will happen to everyone, but also good things will happen to everyone. Lots of things will happen in your life. A lot of them will be hard. A lot of them will also be good. And you don't need to have control over everyone and everything in your life for you to feel good. You can let go of control on everything, realize that things are going to happen no matter what, but you can choose how you react to them. If somebody is driving annoying and you want to like scream at them and start road raging, that's one reaction you could have. But another reaction you could have would just be saying, oh, maybe they're having a bad day. Like they're clearly not doing well right now. I'm just gonna forget about that and go back to my day. It's no reason to get upset over it. The more I've started doing this, the more it seems to be my natural reaction. Now it's like getting upset over these minuscule things feels silly. And when I see other people do it, I'm almost like, come on, it's not worth it. And 12, the way you choose to see the world is how it will actually be. And this might sound weird at first, but I think it goes along with an episode that I have that's about becoming an optimist. Literally just you changing the way that you see things actually changes your experience of them. So like we create our own life experience. Two people could experience the same thing. They could have the same thing happen to them, but they could have vastly different experiences because of the fact that they have different perspectives. So if you choose to see things in a positive light, if you choose to see the best in people and see the world in a peaceful, beautiful way, the world will look peaceful and beautiful to you. Whereas if you choose to see the world in a negative light, if you choose to find the bad in everything, to nitpick everyone, to find the worst parts of your day and point them out at the end of every single day, you will see the world in a very negative light. And it will truly affect your experience of living. And number 12, growth feels uncomfortable, but is always worth it. This is something I have a particularly hard time with because change just, like I said, it feels uncomfortable. Growth is a weird feeling, but everything in life serves you in some way, and you might not even realize in the moment how it's going to end up serving you. But years down the line, you might be able to look back and say, you know what, this was necessary for this, or at the very least, I got this out of this experience. Maybe you had a terrible, horrible, awful breakup, which I have had and been heartbroken. But then years down the line, I realized that was a terrible relationship. That taught me about my standards and about my boundaries and about the way that I will and won't accept to be treated. If I hadn't had that relationship, I may not have realized those things. So although it's uncomfortable in the moment and it can feel like the worst thing in the world, life is teaching you things and those lessons are going to be worth it, even if it's uncomfortable for the moment. I just urge you to find the lesson in there, to look and say, well, even though this awful thing happened, at least I got this out of it. Number 13 is self-worth isn't earned, it's claimed. Every single person on this earth has the right to a high self-worth. It's not something you have to work your way towards. It's not something you deserve only at a certain point, but it's something you're born with. It's a given. The sooner you realize that, the better. You don't have to love everything about yourself to love yourself. And it took me a long time to realize that. I thought that self-love meant I was gonna find myself perfect, think that all of my features were perfect, everything I did was perfect. Well, let's be honest, that's never going to be the case because humans aren't perfect. You don't have to be perfect to love yourself. All you have to do is acknowledge that you're inherently valuable, even at your worst moments. You don't have to do anything or accomplish anything to be worthy or valuable. You just have to accept yourself as you are. Why would I go through life hating things about myself, depriving myself of self-love and acceptance when I could just literally choose to love myself? And it's that simple. I also have a full episode about self-love if you want to check that out to hear more on this topic. But number 14 is comparison steals your joy. And I actually made a whole episode about this as well. But the best thing you can do is stay focused on yourself. The more you look at other people, compare your lives to theirs, the worse you will feel about yourself. There is an extent that can be good of using other people's success as motivation, but it can get to a point where you're almost just obsessed with them, or you begin to hate them because they've done things that you haven't and things that you want to do. Instead, use this as motivation. Stay in your own lane. Focus on yourself and stop looking at others, looking at their social media accounts, comparing yourself to them. Realize that life is a very individualistic journey. Everybody's path is going to look different, and that's totally okay. We don't want to all be the same. We don't want all of our paths to be the same. That would be really, really weird. Even if you look at someone and think that they're progressing quicker than you, or they've accomplished things you could only dream of accomplishing, those are still possible for you too. And there's no need to feel envious. Number 15, being present is the only thing that matters. As I started reading more and more self-development books, one of the main themes in every single one is that being present is the key. It's the way to enlightenment, to peace, to everything you want in life. Being present allows you to seize the moment, be 100% in whatever it is that you're doing. Otherwise, you'll be living in the future, thinking about things that haven't happened yet, or you're living in the past, dwelling on things that have already happened that you can't change. All we have is the everlasting present moment, or the infinite present moment, as people call it, and discovering that and seizing that will be your key to life. Number 16, your energy is your currency, so use it wisely. The things and the people that you spend your energy on are very important. They will dictate the way that your life looks, the people that will be in your life. Everyone could do anything, but it's a matter of what you choose to do that shapes your life. Kind of a random example, but I stumbled across a YouTube video a few weeks ago, and this girl was talking about how she kept seeing posts about people saying that they were making thousands and hundreds of thousands or tens of thousands a month from affiliate marketing. And she was like, what? How are they making that much from affiliate marketing? I do not make that much. I don't make nearly that much. She was a content creator. She decided to start pouring everything into affiliate marketing. And in that month, or in those next few months, she made a lot of money from affiliate marketing. She was making just as much as some of those other people that she had idolized. And she realized that her overall income was the same, because although now she was making much more from affiliate marketing, she was making much less from her other revenue sources because she had been pouring so much more of her energy into affiliate marketing. The moral of the story is that your energy is not infinite. The amount of energy that you have is limited. You can't do everything all the time. You get tired. And we know that energy cannot be created or destroyed. It's only reused. It's redistributed. Think about where you want your energy to go. What is really important to you? There's this book called The One Thing. I actually haven't even read it, but I've heard about it and I feel like it would touch on this concept. But pick that thing that you want your energy to go toward, that person you want it to go toward. And then also think about, what are your energy drainers? What is sucking your energy that could be used for something so much better? And get that out of your life. Number 17, you don't have to fix everyone. Heal yourself first. You are not responsible for saving, healing, fixing anybody else, literally anyone. As hard as that may be, even if it's honestly a family member, a significant other, it is not your duty. And you might burden yourself by thinking that way, by feeling like you need to save everyone in your life and do things for them. Like they say, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. I found a lot of the time that when I try to save someone else or really lead them to a certain life, it doesn't make a difference, because if it's not coming from within them, it doesn't matter anyway. If you see somebody in a terribly toxic relationship and you try to tell them over and over, that guy is terrible for you, he's literally horrible, it doesn't matter until she finally decides to see it for herself. Then she'll be able to leave him. Otherwise, it's like everybody in the world could tell them that, but until they make the decision for themselves, it's not gonna matter. The most powerful way to make an impact on others is to heal yourself. Work on your own energy and let that be a rippling effect outward. It's not to say never like help anyone in your life, but I really mean that it's not your duty. It's not your duty to save everyone and to help everyone. Like if you feel attracted to broken people, people that need fixing, or think that it's your job to make others' lives better, it's not. And when you realize this, you'll start choosing peace over chaos, and actually you will attract people who are healed or healing instead of people who need saving. Basically, you can love someone deeply and still let them face the consequences of their choices and their actions. It's not your responsibility, no matter how hard it may be, to put them on the right path. It's their own responsibility. You can lead by example, be a blueprint, and give off your own healing energy by working on yourself. Number 18, trust your gut and spot red flags early on in a relationship. Honestly, a friendship as well. When I got into a past relationship years ago, I was too young, honestly, to know that I needed to look for red flags in someone. And I think it can be easy to get swept up in the butterflies and, oh, maybe you think they're cute or they do something sweet for you, and not see the red flags that might be there. And after this like terrible relationship, I had such a radar for red flags. I made sure that any person I even considered talking to after that, I felt them out. Like I was like, where do you stand on these issues? How do you feel about these things? I saw how they treated other people, how they treated waiters, how they talked to me, the type of manners that they had, like everything about them is going to be a clue as to how they're going to treat you, how your relationship with them could look years down the line. Of course, they're going to be sweet and perfect to you at the start, but you've got to really, really look deeply, because any little red flag you see is going to be magnified times 10 when you're with them for years and years and years. Once your heart gets too involved, it's like impossible to even take a step back. Even if you see the red flags and now it's like too late and you're already like, I'm in love with them, I can't. It's too late. Number 19, you don't need to be low maintenance to be loved. This might sound kind of weird, but I feel like it's sort of a stereotype that like high maintenance people or high maintenance girls are really annoying and nobody wants to deal with that. And I'm not even talking high maintenance in the sense that like, I don't know, maybe the stereotypical sense where it's like, oh, you need designer things or whatever. I'm talking like I always felt like I'm high maintenance because I have issues. Like that sounds kind of weird, but I had a rough adolescence in terms of having really, really bad mental health. And it was a burden to other people. At least it felt that way to me. When I was dealing with all this, it was like, I have all these accommodations that I need because of these issues and these mental disorders that I have. And to me, it sort of made me feel like I'm too much. This is too much for people to handle. And honestly, even over the years, I'm still this way. I'm still have sort of weird anxiety or OCD things that I don't force everyone in my life to falter to, but at the end of the day, it is more than maybe the average person would deal with. It's, you know, my boyfriend sort of having to deal with some weird little things that I have, like, and I've even had people say like to him, oh, you're a saint for putting up with her or something like that. And I was like, oh my gosh, like that does not make a girl feel good. It basically makes me feel like I'm too much. I'm too high maintenance to be loved. Or like somebody would see me and be like, oh, she's so great, like whatever, she's pretty, whatever. But then like realize that I have some issues and be like, ooh, never mind. But that's just not the case. That's just not the case. Everybody has their own things. Literally every single person has some sort of weird issues, or I don't even want to say issues. They might just have some things going on. Like everybody has some sort of baggage or thing that they carry with them or thing that they struggle with. And that is not cause for being unlovable. It also means that you are not too much for wanting reassurance, clear communication, having standards in a relationship, not putting up with someone who is not going to treat you well, not putting up with someone who's not gonna make your birthday feel special or make a dinner reservation for your anniversary. Like those can be baseline things that some people may view as high maintenance, but it's not. It's not high maintenance. It's really the bare minimum, and you don't have to shrink yourself down to be loved, basically. And the right person will love you and do those things for you no matter what. Number 20, manifestation requires action, not just wishing. You can't just wish for something over and over and over and hope that it will happen. If you want to manifest something into your existence, you have to put in the work, girl. The The manifestation is what aligns your mindset and your subconscious mind with the end goal. If you don't do the work that's going to get you there as well, you won't manifest the things that you want. Number 21, start before you're ready. If you have a dream, it's not stupid. Start working towards the dream, even if you don't feel ready yet. I feel like our dreams will never lead us astray. There's a reason that you want what you want. And there's a reason that that's in your heart. Number 22 is consistency beats perfection every time. There can be a person with raw natural talent that never practices, and the person that puts in the time, they put in the work, they practice, and they work hard, they will beat the natural talent every time if the natural talent doesn't put in any work. If there's something you really want, working at it, even if it's not perfect, is always going to be the way to go. I also think about this in terms of my YouTube channel. I often feel like a video isn't done yet, or it's not perfect yet, or I could add more. But then part of me is like, you know what? I've spent a lot of time on this video already. There are other things I want to work on, and I don't think that these changes I'm thinking of making will really make much of a difference. My audience doesn't even know what I have in mind for this video. They don't even know what it would be missing because I haven't told them, or like I haven't added it yet. Me posting the video is better than me not posting it and delaying my posting schedule and stressing myself out over making it perfect. Number 23, your vibe attracts your tribe. That is such a cringy little saying, but basically your energy and the way that you present yourself and the type of person that you are will attract that type of person to you. So basically curate your circle accordingly. Think carefully about who you let into your inner circle. You know that saying, like, you end up being just like the five people closest to you or something, like you're the culmination of the five people who are closest to you or who you see the most. It really is true. You will start picking up on their mannerisms, their habits, the things that they do, the things that they say. You can use that to your advantage or to your disadvantage. If you pick people who are like a sinking ship, they will take you down with them and drag you into their bad habits. But if you pick people who inspire you, who make you excited about life, or who are on a path you want to be on, it will make all the difference. And number 24, not everyone will want you or like you, and that doesn't mean you're unworthy. Rejection stings all the time, but it doesn't have anything to do with your value. I think it can be really hard to think like, oh my God, why don't they want me? Like someone breaks up with you, someone just doesn't like you back, or you have like a friend breakup, or someone just doesn't seem interested in you. And you're like, what's wrong with me? Why am I not good enough for them? Am I not pretty enough? Am I not smart enough? What's wrong with me? But the truth is, nothing is personal. Literally nothing is personal, and it's not about you. It's about them. People make decisions based on their own emotional capacity, their fears, their desires, their current mental state. It has nothing to do with you or who you are. So if someone doesn't want you, it's not because you're not enough. It's just because your presence doesn't align with their current path. And that has everything to do with them. And then I also think, like, I love the quote, there's no such thing as rejection, only redirection. If you get rejected in any way, shape, or form, and you're feeling unworthy, upset, it might just be putting you on the path to the person or the job or the career or the achievement that's going to make all the difference for you. It could just be pointing you towards this path, but you can't see the bigger picture. All you can see is this zoomed in look, and you're like, why isn't it right? But honestly, oftentimes it's a dodged bullet, and it's a good thing that things worked out the way that they did. Whew, that was a lot of talking. I feel like I talked a little bit too long about each of those points, but I really hope that this was helpful for you. Thank you guys for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Stay tuned for some more, because we're going to be getting back on track with this podcast, so don't you worry. And you can also check out some of my older episodes if you're in the mood for some more glow and tell. Hope you have an amazing day, and I will talk to you soon.